The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
No matter who you're shopping for, Sherry's Berries is the one-stop shop for everyone on your list. This year, don't battle the crowds to get the perfect gift. Shop with convenience right from your home. Freshly dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries, starting at just $19.99. That's over a 30% savings. Or double the berries for just $10 more. You just need my code to take advantage of this deal. FTN. These delicious berries are an incredible, unique gift that's perfect for sharing, though they may not want to. Choose the delivery day, and Sherry's Berries will deliver your gift fresh and on time. With Christmas right around the corner, there's only one way to get this amazing $19.99 Sherry's Berries deal and help support our show. Just visit berries.com, berries.com, click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner, and type in FTN. Sherry's Berries has something for everyone and every taste. Go to berries.com, click on the microphone, and type in FTN.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Donald Trump, to be president of the United States starting on January 20th, is putting together his governing team. A typical example, an Environmental Protection Administrator who seems to be opposed to everything the EPA has been doing under President Obama. We'll have more on that and related issues. Later, the protest against an oil pipeline in North Dakota grew, and the death of hero astronaut John Glenn.
Good Lord, ride all the way.
Godspeed, John Glenn.
Former Senator Glenn has died at age 95. We'll look back. Also at the 75th anniversary of Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor, which pulled the United States into World War II.
December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
I'm Dan Revive at CBS News in Washington. A lot more ahead on this weekend roundup. And let's begin with Donald Trump constructing his administration. Some critics, many liberal Democrats, say yes, there are some women and some ethnic and racial minorities getting the top jobs, but mainly it's rich white men. The president-elect, at one of his thank you rallies, this one in Des Moines, Iowa, on Thursday, said about his appointees who will try to rewrite trade agreements.
And one newspaper criticized me. Why can't they have people of modest means? Because I want people that made a fortune. I mean, we want the people that are going to bring, and they're so proud to do it. These people have given up fortunes of income in order to make a dollar a year. And they're so proud to do it. And you watch what's going to happen. It's going to happen fast, too.
Mr. Trump also said by eliminating regulations such as limits on greenhouse gas emissions, the American people will be protected better environmentally and will have more jobs. Which brings us to one of his controversial nominees, Scott Pruitt, Attorney General of Oklahoma, to be head of the Environmental Protection Agency if the Senate confirms him. CBS's Nancy Cordes reported on Wednesday.
Al Gore's meeting with Mr. Trump the other day gave environmentalists hope. But that hope evaporated. Pruitt claims the debate over climate change is far from settled and has repeatedly sued the EPA over fossil fuel regulations. Senator Brian Schatz is a Democrat from Hawaii.
This person who wants to lead the EPA has actually made a career out of undermining the EPA. So this is really the worst case scenario, and we're going to have a fight.
The president-elect also made waves today with his choice of world wrestling impresario, Linda McMahon, to head the Small Business Administration. Less explosive was his choice for ambassador to China, Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, whose state exports billions of dollars worth of soybeans and pork to China. Retired Marine Corps General and border security hawk John Kelly will be tapped to lead the Department of Homeland Security.
The president-elect stopped in Columbus on Thursday to meet and praise the campus policeman who had shot and killed an attacker, an immigrant inspired by Muslim radicalism, who'd been stabbing people at Ohio State after hitting them with his car. CBS's Major Garrett covered Mr. Trump on Thursday.
Yet one more tragic reminder that immigration security is now national security.
Donald Trump said the Ohio State knife attack by a Somali-born refugee is another example of America's broken immigration system and that he has a plan to fix it.
They're going to come in through a process. They're going to come in legally. And we're going to see that these people have true capability to love us, not to hate us.
Making a point to praise female voters who played a substantial role in his victory, Mr. Trump offered more than just gratitude.
I'm asking Congress to pass legislation to make safe and affordable child care accessible to all.
The newest Trump-selected millionaire, fast food restaurant CEO Andrew Puzder, as labor secretary. Puzder is CEO of CKE Restaurants, the parent company of Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. Puzder opposes raising the minimum wage, arguing it cuts jobs by unnecessarily increasing labor costs.
That from Major Garrett. President Obama delivered his last scheduled national security speech in Tampa, Florida, after a private briefing with the military's SOCOM, the Special Operations Command. As CBS's Pam Coulter reports, Mr. Obama defended changing the counterterrorism war and making it a bit more transparent.
Plots directed from within Afghanistan and Pakistan have been consistently disrupted. Its leadership has been decimated. Dozens of terrorist leaders have been killed. Osama bin Laden is dead.
Looking back over 8 years of battling al-Qaeda and ISIS, President Obama said his strategy of letting local troops do the fighting has paid off.
By protecting our homeland while drawing down the number of troops serving in harm's way overseas, we helped save resources, but more importantly, we saved lives.
Speaking at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, the president again called for the closing of the Guantanamo Bay prison, which he believes is a recruiting tool for terrorists. Pam Coulter, CBS News, Washington.
Now to Oakland, California. What a tragedy last weekend. In a warehouse where artists and their friends were living and partying, a fire killed three dozen, ranging in age from 17 to 61. CBS's Steve Futterman at the burned-out scene reported Tuesday night.
The Alameda County Sheriff says investigators are looking at the possibility of a malfunctioning refrigerator being the cause of the fire. But Oakland Fire Chief Teresa Deloach Reed says no final conclusion has been made.
There is no determination at this time of origin or cause.
The fire chief refused to say whether or not the refrigerator is being looked at. Meanwhile, the search for bodies is nearing its end. 36 bodies have been found.
Also in Oakland, CBS's David Begno. His report includes the mayor, Libby Schaff.
According to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, there is no indication the fire was deliberately set. Oakland's mayor confirms there were multiple complaints filed against the structure. She is promising complete transparency, including the release of years of city records connected to the property. One document says inspectors came here just 2 weeks before the fire but couldn't get inside. Recovery workers told Sergeant J.D. Nelson it was heartbreaking for them as well.
There was a man and a woman, and they were in a prone position, and the man was in such a way that it looked like he was shielding her from harm's way.
What a tragedy in Oakland. In North Dakota, protesters, many of them Native Americans, scored a victory, perhaps only a temporary one, when the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers ordered that construction of an oil pipeline not continue under a Missouri River reservoir.
A lot of people that are at the protest camp are fully aware that President-elect Trump supports the pipeline.
Meaning they expect Donald Trump's administration to reverse their victory and give a green light to the Dakota Access Pipeline. That was CBS News correspondent Omar Villafranca.
Some people were leaving, but a lot of people have vowed to stay because many of them feel that they can't trust the pipeline builders. And so a lot of them feel that they have to stay there to make sure something doesn't happen and they're not there to protest against it.
In sub-freezing weather, snow, ice, and wind, the protesters included almost 2,000 U.S. military veterans who said they had to show up to help the Indian tribes defend their rights. Up next, the death of one of the most popular Americans, the astronaut and former senator John Glenn. That story and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. Everyone agrees John Glenn was a good-natured, hard-working hero, willing to fly into orbit around the Earth, the first American to do that at a time when rockets were often blowing up on the launch pad. Glenn went on to be a U.S. senator representing Ohio, then went back into space late in his 70s. Now he has died at age 95. Here's CBS's Scott Pelley.
Back in 1962, America was losing the space race. The Soviets had already sent a man into orbit, and just 6 months after that, they detonated the world's largest atom bomb. So the pressure and excitement were sky high that February day when Glenn, America's knight in shining spacesuit, compressed himself into Friendship 7. School children held their breath watching black and white TVs. Grand Central Terminal stopped in its tracks, eyes glued to a big screen. And President Kennedy waited to exhale at the White House.
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
Minutes later, Glenn reported 0G and I feel fine. It would be his signature catchphrase for the rest of his life.
Quite a life. Ed Crane filed this report.
John Herschel Glenn Jr. was born in Cambridge, Ohio on July 18, 1921. He was a much-decorated Marine Corps fighter pilot during World War II and the Korean conflict. A test pilot after the war, Glenn's name became known to the nation in 1958 when he appeared on the CBS quiz show Name That Tune.
Major John Glenn Jr., the Marine Corps jet pilot.
The following year, Glenn had the backing of his family when he was chosen to be one of the original Mercury astronauts.
My wife's attitude toward this has been the same as it has been all along through all my flying, that if it's what I want to do she's behind it, and the kids are too, 100%.
John Glenn was chosen to fly the first manned orbital mission America would attempt. After 4 hours and 55 minutes, John Glenn splashed down safely in the Atlantic and into history. After retiring from NASA in 1965, he worked in private industry until he was elected to the Senate from Ohio in 1974. 10 years later, Glenn ran for president. Glenn's candidacy failed, but he was reelected to the Senate 3 times, where he was considered a leading expert on scientific matters and was widely respected for his work to stop the spread of nuclear weapons and to clean up waste in government. But wherever he went, John Glenn was always asked about that day in 1962.
It does remain all very vivid to me today. It seems to me like just a week or two ago that it all happened.
After he announced he would retire from the Senate in 1998, Glenn convinced NASA to let him return to space aboard the space shuttle as part of an experiment to study the effects of weightlessness on his 77-year-old body.
On behalf of everybody my age and older and those who are about to be our age before too many years have gone, I can guarantee you I'll give it my very best try.
3, 2, 1. Booster ignition and liftoff of Discovery with a crew of 6 astronaut heroes and 1 American legend.
I'm Peter King. Talk to anyone and you'll hear that John Glenn never put on airs and was always the real deal. Apollo 7 astronaut Walt Cunningham joined NASA the year after Glenn's first flight.
He stuck to the rules and the honors of being a Marine fighter pilot, regardless of what else was going on.
As a reporter, I could say there was nothing better than doing a John Glenn interview. He was always candid, always interesting. I'd call him Senator or Colonel. He'd say, call me John, and I'd say, I can't do that. You're John Glenn.
Godspeed, John Glenn.
Peter King, CBS News.
Now to Charleston, South Carolina, the beginning of the federal trial of Dylann Roof that could lead to the death penalty for 9 murders designated as a hate crime. He opened fire on black people at a Bible class last year in a famous church in Charleston. Now a jury will decide if Roof, 22 years old, should live or die. CBS's Mark Strassman reported on the start of the trial on Wednesday.
2 buses brought relatives of those murdered in the church massacre to federal court, where they found Dylann Roof dressed in his jail jumpsuit, avoiding eye contact with anyone. In his opening statement, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jay Richardson said Roof's attack was cold and calculated, a racist retribution for perceived offenses against the white race. Roof visited a Wednesday night Bible study at Mother Emanuel Church. It became a slaughter of the innocents. Survivor Felicia Sanders testified her wounded 26-year-old son, Taiwanza, said to Roof, "Why are you doing this? We mean you no harm." Roof shot him 5 more times. His mother watched him die. Among those sobbing in the courtroom was Sharon Risher.
"His eyes sense evil to me."
Risher's mother, 70-year-old Ethel Lance, was among those murdered.
"Who goes into a church and do that?"
Her mother was among the murder victims.
I'm Jim Krasul in Charleston, South Carolina. As he's done during his entire trial, Dylann Roof stared blankly ahead as a crime scene investigator described a gruesome video of the Emanuel Amy Church shooting scene. The bodies of the 9 victims were seen lying on the ground, close to each other. Several open Bibles were sitting on nearby tables. There were dozens of spent shell casings and ammunition magazines scattered on the linoleum floor.
In the war against ISIS in both Iraq and Syria, U.S. forces are helping others try to recapture territory from that terrorist group. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick reported on Thursday.
A senior U.S. military official estimates 50,000 ISIS fighters have been killed in the 2 years since operations began in Iraq and Syria. The same official pointed to the growing complexity of the fight. In northwestern Syria, he said there are the makings of a meeting between Turkish forces, Syrian opposition, and Kurdish forces, both of whom U.S. Special Operations Forces are with, and Syrian regime and Russian troops, what he described as a wave of tectonic plates coming together to figure out how to squeeze out ISIS.
Now to the second largest city in Syria, Aleppo. It's been a war zone since 2011. Anti-government rebels took over. There was some ISIS involvement, not so much now. In fact, thanks to Russian airstrikes, the Syrian government has recaptured most of Aleppo. CBS News correspondent Deborah Patta is in the city. Her report from Wednesday.
The Syrian government, backed by Russia, is using every means at its disposal to take back eastern Aleppo. But still, rebel factions are refusing to give up. But opposition control over the east is weakening every day as the Syrian army takes back chunks of territory. Like here in Al-Shar, where the air still chokes with dust. Government forces took it back just 1 day ago. A few streets away, we come across civilians who just got out. If they can't walk themselves, they are carried to safety. Mohammed Dokman cannot contain himself. This is the first time he's seen his mother, Zalia, in 5 years. My soul, she sobs, you are everything to me, my son. It's been 5 years since the war divided Aleppo and separated this family. Zalia gets to meet grandchildren she's never seen.
That's what war does to people caught in the middle. You heard CBS's Deborah Patta in Aleppo, Syria. Up next, the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, which propelled the United States into World War II. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sign Now by Barracuda Networks is the next generation in e-signature solutions, accelerating business transactions for more than 4 million people and counting. Sign Now is priced at a fraction of the cost of comparable solutions, offers superior ease of use, yet includes all the enterprise-class security and functionality your business will ever need to safely go paperless. Sign Now is pre-integrated with Salesforce, Office 365, and Google Apps, and you can even integrate Sign Now with your own app through its API. Visit signnow.com and enter promo code RADIO to start your free trial.
When you're opening a new office location, but deadlines don't let up, you need to make sure your team can start working fast, which means all of a sudden, you're looking to buy new conference tables, chairs, laptops, and whiteboards quickly. Business cards from American Express Open can give you buying power to help cover the big purchases you need to make when you need to make them. Find out how American Express cards and services can help prepare you for growth at open.com.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. And that was the sound here in Washington on a sunny, cold afternoon, Wednesday, December 7th, that date that lives in infamy. It was the 75th anniversary of the attack by Japan on the U.S. Navy base at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. And this was a memorial ceremony in Washington.
On the telephone with our station in...
That attack brought the United States into World War II against Japan and its ally, Nazi Germany.
Number between 50.
Listen to how CBS Radio News dealt with this sudden, urgent story, kind of like 9/11, a surprise attack that would occur 60 years later.
Attacking planes come in. We received a bulletin just a little while ago which reported that there have been some of these, what Manila Corps, rather Honolulu, calls unidentified planes shot down.
2,400 Americans were killed in the attack. Survivors visit Pearl Harbor in Honolulu, especially on the anniversary. On the 75th, helped by a Colorado-based charity called Wish of a Lifetime, veteran Mel Heckman, who lives in Wyoming, flew with his family to the ceremony on the Navy base. CBS's John Blackstone was there.
This is it. This is the exact spot where it happened 75 years ago. We saved as many men as we could.
At 93, this was Heckman's wish, to return for the first time with his daughter, grandchildren, even a great-grandson, the place he was standing as Japanese planes attacked.
I remember every moment like it happened yesterday. When the Japanese came in, the sky was black. There were so many of them, planes and explosions.
The battleships Arizona and Oklahoma were hit right in front of him. The water was on fire. Heckman helped rescue sailors swimming through the flames.
You were 18 years old. A lot of them were 18, 19
That's
years
it.
Old.
Kids, like my grandson standing right there.
Standing here hearing your story, Grandpa.
The story had inspired grandson Josh to join the Navy, but this time it had power he did not expect.
Being on a ship, I see these people and I can see them.
Yeah.
Couldn't imagine.
Heckman's daughter Joanne had heard the story before, but not like this.
I can see it happening. I can hear all the bombs and the commotion.
My grandfather is not only a great American hero, he's my hero.
As the number of survivors steadily declines, their nation and their families pledge always to remember. John Blackston, CBS News, Pearl Harbor.
CBS News national security correspondent David Martin investigated how President Roosevelt handled the attack on the American base in Hawaii. David went to the FDR Library in Hyde Park, New York.
The phone rings at this desk. It's the Secretary of Navy on the line, and he tells the president that the Pearl Harbor Naval Base is under attack.
Herman Eberhardt is the library's curator.
First reaction was to shout into the phone, no, sort of in a state of disbelief.
Within a matter of hours, Roosevelt had dictated and edited in his own hand one of the greatest presidential speeches ever.
A date which will live in infamy.
But there were moments, says Paul Sparrow, director of the FDR Library, when the enormity of what had happened almost overwhelmed the president.
He was having dinner with his son and some of his closest advisors where I think the weight got to him. He felt that he was going to go down in history as a terrible president.
Later that same evening, around midnight, he met with CBS newsman Edward R. Murrow.
And Roosevelt just opened up about the full extent of what had happened in Hawaii.
By then, Roosevelt knew, but had not told the public, that American aircraft had been caught sitting wingtip to wingtip on the runway. Murrow left knowing he had a story that would stop the presses.
But he said later that he felt that Roosevelt was really just using him as a sounding board, and he did not feel that it was appropriate for him to run with the story, even though Roosevelt had not said that the meeting was off the record.
David Martin, CBS News, Hyde Park, New York.
Back to the present now, and the next president of the United States, Donald Trump. He's been named by Time magazine as Person of the Year. No surprise, who else came out of almost nowhere and defeated all the other candidates for the top political and executive job in our nation, perhaps in the world? The Time magazine cover has a photo he posed for and says, President of the Divided States of America. Mr. Trump says that was snarky. He didn't cause any division, he says. What about his continued use of Twitter when he gets angry at someone, like a union official who accused Mr. Trump of lying about how many jobs he saved in Indianapolis? The president-elect tweeted that that union man was doing a terrible job. Let's turn to an expert on chief executives, Jeffrey Sonnenfeld at the Yale School of Management, where you are Senior Associate Dean for Leadership Studies. You said the other day on CNBC that no one should mess with the Donald. But it's normal for presidents to be criticized.
They don't usually get in sparring matches with individual corporate leaders. You know, that old Jim Croce song about not, you know, tugging on Superman's cape and spitting in the wind and all that and don't mess around with Jim is when you get into a food fight with President-elect Trump, it's not going to work out well for the person tossing the food his way. He responds pretty tough, not just in measured response, but it tends to come back even harsher. And who needs that? Focus on the issues, not the people. And rather than aggravate him, get to the core issues. CEOs that right now are bewildered, they're frightened, and some are very excited on some of the regulatory releases and tax reform and trade issues that have come up. Many are excited, but they still don't know how to deal with him because they don't want to get into sparring matches. And he goes after individual companies and individual CEOs by name.
Well, just the other day, for instance, he singled out Boeing aircraft. He said the program that he said would cost $4 billion, that's not anything official, to develop a new Air Force One is out of control.
I think it's ridiculous. I think Boeing is doing a little bit of a number. We want Boeing to make a lot of money, but not that much money.
Now, do you think Mr. Trump on that was just trying to make headlines?
No, I mean, there really are some issues. I think Boeing is an extremely well-managed company, but there are issues of cost overruns, and defense contracting has been out there as a major concern that he's raising. The question is a good thing. $4 billion sounds a tad high for an airplane, but actually I think it's two aircraft as part of the system, and it's got to be able to deal with all kinds of catastrophic situations that this is a fully equipped Oval Office. But still, that's pretty high. And his opening position was, well, then we don't need the plane then. Just cancel it. And then he seems to have come off of that a little bit right now, just say how they can work on pricing. But he's identified Boeing. He's identified Ford Motor Company and Carrier, United Technologies companies. They're all extremely well-led companies. The CEOs have wisely not fired back with insults, but instead have gone with preparation to answer the issues. When you deal with President-elect Trump, you don't want to go in there groveling. You have to be anchored in strength, make sure that you have a unified position in management and you have some grassroots support with your workforce and you have the facts.
Professor Jeffrey Sonnenfeld at the Yale School of Management, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan.
Please follow us on Twitter. Our guest is at Jeff Sonnenfeld. We have headlines at CBS Radio News. And I'm at Dan Revive on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. The Middle East crisis used to mean Israel versus the Palestinians fighting over the same land, where Israel became an independent Jewish state in 1948. But the leaders of Arab countries rejected compromises then and since then, so a Palestinian Arab state has never been created. Since then, there are many other Middle East crises, but still the Palestinian-Israeli dispute is unresolved. The Palestinians have partial autonomy in the West Bank, and Israel pulled out of the Gaza Strip 11 years ago, and a radical Palestinian faction governs in Gaza. That's some of the background to what John Kerry had to say last weekend. It was 2 years ago that he gave up his efforts to mediate a deal at the Saban Forum, a Brookings Institution get-together focused on the U.S.-Israel alliance. Kerry said negotiations to create a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza had better resume, and to give that a chance, construction of Jewish settlements should stop, because otherwise Israel will find itself ruling over an Arab majority, if you count Israelis and the people who live in the territories Israel captured in the Six-Day War 49 years ago.
Questions I raise about Israel, not because we don't care about Israel, it's because we do care. It's because we want to be able to see this thing develop into the full-blossomed beacon that Israel has potential being. And when I say that, Israel has enormous agricultural skills, technology skills, innovation, and all this capacity, which it could be sharing with Egypt, with Jordan, with the Emirates, with Saudi Arabia, with all of these countries who, by the way, talk to me about their desire to do that sharing. But there will be no separate peace between Israel and the Arab world. I want to make that very clear to all of you. There will be no advance and separate peace with the Arab world without the Palestinian process and Palestinian peace. That is a hard reality. There's a basic choice that has to be made by Israelis, by the leadership of Israel. Are there going to be continued settlements? Is there going to be a continued implementation of settlement policy? Or is there going to be separation and the creation of two states?
Secretary of State Kerry said most of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's cabinet ministers do not want a two-state compromise, so they don't want peace talks. They want the Jewish state to keep the West Bank. Kerry feels that's a mistake. Let's hear a different viewpoint from the mayor of Jerusalem near Barkat. That Israeli politician, while visiting New York, spoke with Josh Elliott on our digital video service, CBSN. Barkat expressed confidence that the Trump administration will be so friendly that Israel will be able to strengthen the Jewish majority in Jerusalem. Remember, the eastern sector of that city was captured from Jordan in 1967 and won't hassle the Israelis much about settlements.
First of all, Jerusalem must be taken off the table in the negotiations between Israel, Palestinians, and around us. The rationale is, if you go back 3,000 years, you understand that Jerusalem played a major role in the world. It was inclusive, open for all tribes, Jews and non-Jews alike. And the role that Jerusalem plays as an integrated, united, undivided city is second to no other city in the world. It will never function, God forbid, if it gets divided. So while we want to include everyone in the city of Jerusalem, mm-hmm. we should shy away from division.
While not wanting to draw you into American politics, still it will be Donald Trump.
There's no doubt in my mind that the relationship between President-elect Trump and Israel, and similarly to the relationship between Israel and Jerusalem, and America will just be stronger and better. I'm very optimistic that we will improve the relationship and do the right things for the inauguration of 50 years of reunification of the city of Jerusalem and the relationship with President-elect Trump. No doubt in my mind.
I want to get you out of here on this one. Having spent some time with Jared Kushner, there's a lot of questions now about what role he might play. Many believe that, in fact, for relationships such as the one he has with you, he might be something of a Middle East envoy. What pragmatic impact, then, can he have on an age-old quest for peace in the Middle East?
I think you must ask the President-elect Trump about that. In any case, I really believe that Jared is a good man. Mm-hmm. He understands what's going on, and the better, the larger role he will play, the more happy I will be.
Nir Barkat, mayor of Jerusalem, speaking with CBSN anchor Josh Elliott. Barkat considers himself a friend of Mr. Trump's Jewish son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Let's switch to music, a great classic rock band, the Eagles. The band began in 1970 in Los Angeles when Don Henley met Glenn Frey. Frey died 11 months ago at age 67. This month, the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts here in Washington honored the Eagles at the annual Kennedy Center Honors. That's why Gail King of CBS This Morning interviewed the drummer Don Henley. On a dark desert highway,
cool wind in my head. Hotel California is such a classic. I have no clue what it means, but I like it.
Yeah, well, me neither. Radio was different in those days.
Don, stop. You don't know what it means? You have some idea. You know what it means. You wrote it.
Some idea.
Can you just give me two sentences what the hell it means?
Well, I always say it's a journey from innocence to experience. And it's not really about California. It's about America, the dark underbelly of the American dream. It's about excess. It's about narcissism, the music business. It's about a lot of different things. You can have a million interpretations. Welcome to the Hotel
California. I'll just do a speed dial about the members, and you just tell me
okay. What
comes to you when I name them. Bernie.
Bernie. Really great.
Bernie Leadon.
Really great musicianship. A guy who did not like fame at all. Come on and take it
to the limit. Randy Meisner.
Very sensitive guy. Very talented. A farm boy like me. He was the only guy who could sing that high.
Don Felder.
Incredible guitar player. Yeah, one of the best in the business.
Joe Walsh.
Again, another amazing guitar player and a very funny guy. You know, he brought a lot of good humor and he was sort of the wild card. He was just a
hired hand. Glenn Frey, what you would have to say about him?
He was a very dynamic individual. He came up like I did, playing in rock and roll bands starting in high school. We understood each other. We both loved cars. He had an old 55 Chevy named Gladys that we used to ride around in. We were just, we were a good fit, you know.
Don Henley, a co-founder of that great band, the Eagles, speaking there about his friend and co-founder, Glenn Frey, who died this year. In case you missed the other names in the Eagles, Bernie Leadon, Randy Meisner, Don Felder, and Joe Walsh. Up next, the woman who had an affair with General David Petraeus. They were accused of mishandling government secrets. She speaks with CBS News coming up on the Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
The holidays are fast approaching. Order gifts for everyone on your list with the click of a mouse.
Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get my family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code FTN in the search bar. That's 77% off. Omaha Steaks offers unique gifts for gourmet food lovers. They get to enjoy a great steak experience at home, all with the highest quality cuts and ingredients. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings just to our listeners. Listen to everything that you're going to get for less than $50. Two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, 12-ounce package of all-beef meatballs, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus get four additional kielbasa sausages free. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter the code FTN in the search bar, add the family gift pack to your cart, and get a 77% savings.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. An exclusive interview by Nora O'Donnell you're about to hear is connected with David Petraeus, the retired Army general. Donald Trump hasn't hidden the fact that Petraeus is being considered for a top-level job, perhaps Secretary of State. Petraeus was considered a military innovator on counterinsurgency. He was the head of U.S. Central Command in Asia and the Middle East, then director of the CIA. Until Petraeus had a sex scandal. 2 days after President Obama was reelected in November 2012, he demanded and got the resignation of the CIA director. It wasn't just the extramarital sex. Authorities had learned that Petraeus gave classified information to the woman he was involved with, a military historian, Paula Broadwell. Okay, now Broadwell has resurfaced, interviewed for CBS This Morning by Nora O'Donnell. Paula Broadwell wants another chance to return to her career.
I've been strongly advised to not talk to the press, but I've reached a point where I feel like, you know what, I need to fight back for my life.
You want to move on?
It's time to move on.
But moving on has been difficult for Paula Broadwell. Broadwell and Petraeus admitted to an extramarital affair in 2012. He pleaded guilty last year in federal court to unauthorized removal and retention of classified documents. He was fined $100,000 and remains on probation. Broadwell was never criminally charged.
Do you think he should be allowed to serve in a top-level post in a Trump administration? No, I think he's unequally qualified for many positions, but that's not my position to say. I think the president-elect would have to decide and members of the Senate. As I woke up to the news, you know, it was a bit of a shocker that he was being considered for a cabinet position. And I was both shocked that I'm still in this tenuous position and yet happy because I think he should be able to go on with his life. He's earned it. And so should his family. Why shouldn't I be able to go on?
She served 21 years in the U.S. military, 13 years in the Army Reserve. After the affair, she was demoted from lieutenant colonel to major, lost her top secret security clearance, and just last month received a formal reprimand. Petraeus found out in January that he won't face any military discipline.
What is your status now with the U.S. Army? I am waiting for my resignation paperwork to be approved.
What she really wants, she tells us, is equality. While Petraeus has seen new opportunities, Broadwell says she's been denied them, including a position at a prominent bank.
But I was told by the military recruiter that it would be front page news if it got hired at the bank and the bank wouldn't want to deal with that.
If the bank hired Paula Broadwell.
Exactly. I realized that's probably true, but it was hard to stomach at the time. I have a degree from the University of Denver in international conflict resolution. I have a degree from Harvard in public policy. But I also believe, on principle, I've got something to offer the world, and I'm not a bench warmer. That's not my personality.
Senators from both parties have expressed support for Broadwell. Democrat Claire McCaskill told the political website The Hill there shouldn't be two standards.
What has this been like for your family? Well, they've been incredibly supportive, and I frankly owe my life to my husband and my children. They know I made a mistake and that it hurt Daddy. And what I talk about with them is that when you make a mistake, you acknowledge it, yet you don't dwell on it, and you need to move forward at some point. So we apply that mantra in pretty much everything in our
household. But have you been able to move forward professionally?
Not on the path that I had planned for myself or hoped for. But I'm hopeful, Nora. I think time heals everything. And I'm wiser now. I'm humbler now.
Now, Broadwell says the Justice Department has notified her that it doesn't intend to file criminal charges. Before we learned of her military reprimand, the Army sent us a statement saying it evaluates all allegations of misconduct on a case-by-case basis and determines what type of disciplinary or administrative action is appropriate in a particular case based on the facts and circumstances of that case. What is Broadwell doing now? Well, she founded an organization called the Think Broader Foundation to target what she sees as social and gender bias in the media.
Nora O'Donnell on CBS This Morning. She interviewed Paula Broadwell. Can you believe one out of four kids on this planet lives in danger? The United Nations Children's Fund says, believe it. Larry Miller reports.
The UN says 25% of the world's children live in countries hit by conflict or disaster. A UNICEF video paints a graphic picture of the nightmares faced by millions of children. UNICEF says 535 million children don't have access to medical care, quality education, nutrition, and protection. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Let's end with a report from Africa on how climate change is being blamed for a possible crisis in growing coffee beans. CBS News correspondent Mark Phillips was in Uganda.
To many, it's the other dark liquid that powers the world, coffee. But because of the damage being done to the planet by the primary dark liquid, oil, along with other fossil fuels, coffee is in trouble. And so are the farmers who grow it.
Is this a good harvest year or not so good?
It is not so good.
Up here in the mountains of eastern Uganda, coffee is the most important thing they grow.
The whole family.
Anthony and Vincent Kabbalah's family have been growing it on their farm, about 4,000 feet up the slopes of Mount Elgon, for generations. Lately, though, they've been having problems they've never had before. It turns out coffee is as fussy as the people who drink it. It likes the right altitude, the right temperature, and the right amounts of rain and sunshine in the right order. It's the Goldilocks of crops that likes things just right.
Not enough rain, too much sunshine, bad fruit.
Yes.
And this year, too much sunshine?
Yes.
The warming weather has brought pests and disease that used to live down in the valleys up the hillsides. Crop yields have been dropping and prices are up by as much as 30% in some areas since last year. More than just the consumer's morning pick-me-up is threatened, the farmers are caffeine-dependent for another reason. From picking the berries to processing them to drying and sorting the beans and getting them to market, this is a family business where every member of the family contributes. And where the cash from selling the coffee provides the only income to pay for schools for the kids and for medical care. Coffee production supports an estimated 120 million of some of the world's poorest people. The latest estimates warn that climate change may mean as much as half of the land now used for coffee production around the world may no longer be suitable for it by the middle of this century.
The type of coffee hit worst is the best kind, the Arabica bean. It's the most coveted and the most at risk.
CBS's Mark Phillips back in London from an assignment in the coffee fields of Uganda. Thanks for being with us, and keep in mind, to hear past episodes, you can do an internet search for CBS Weekend Roundup. And please download and use our app for your smartphone. The app is CBS Radio News. The Weekend Roundup is produced in Washington by Steve Dorsey. Have a great week. I'm Dan Revive, CBS News.